Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to episode 5, Inklings. In this episode, we'll talk to talented weaver and teacher Robin Spady about weaving on Inkle looms. Then we'll review the new Knitter's Loom from Ashford and its companion book, Weaving for Knitters, discuss a swatch of the day, and finally end with an audio essay, Dog Warps. Donations continue to flow in, thank you. At this point, your contributions have covered 4 months of server fees. I'm delighted because each donation puts us a bit closer to Weavecast becoming self-sustaining, so thank you. We've got a lot of good content this episode, including our first product review. This came about because a listener, Faith, asked me whether I would recommend the new Knitter's Loom. And I had to tell her I honestly couldn't say because I've never tried one. But then I did a little research on the web, and I discovered that the U.S. distributor for Ashford is in New Zealand, but their U.S. distributor, who covers the entire United States, is located in Bainbridge Island, Washington, which is only about 40 minutes from where I live. So I emailed the representative and asked if I could borrow a loom to test drive for the podcast, and they graciously said yes. So please keep those comments and questions coming. You never know. It could end up on the podcast, so thank you, Faith, for asking that question. I'm adding a new segment to the podcast called Tip of the Day. This will be just a short mention of a weaving tip or trick, one of those little gems that makes everything go more smoothly. If you have one you'd like to share, please email me. Or there's a new web service that lets you record pretty good quality audio right on the web. It's called Audio Studio, and I'll have a link to that on the website, so you could even send me your tip or trick as an audio comment, and it'd be so much fun to get different voices on the podcast, so please consider that.
Just get the ups and downs of life to flow more smoothly. There's no need to turn blue, it's just a little free advice from me to you.
Today's tip is a nifty way to keep your lee sticks separated while you're warping your loom. Lee sticks are what hold the cross and keep threads in order. They're two long rectangular sticks, and traditionally, you tie the two ends of these sticks together with string, which then slips and slides and twists, and in my case, leads to a certain amount of bad language. But Marjorie Erickson of the Olympia Weavers Guild has this simple solution. You take two small rectangles of upholstery foam, and this is the kind of foam that's available from fabric stores. People use it to reupholster their chairs. You need two small rectangles that are each about 1 inch by 1 inch by 4 inches. And if you're really nice to the fabric store folks, they might have some scraps they'll give you for free. I've been lucky in that regard. With your two rectangles, you cut two horizontal slits along the 4 inch length that fit your lee sticks. Now you have two soft, firm holders that will keep your lee sticks nicely spaced. Once you put the warp on, you just slide these little foam things over the ends. No tying involved, much faster. They're foam, so they don't scratch up your lee sticks. And because they're somewhat rigid, they hold your lee sticks nicely spaced apart. And your lee sticks do not flop around. I'll have a picture of what this looks like on the blog. Thank you, Marjorie, for sharing that tip.
Thank you. snake runs through the grass. Plant your seeds in springtime, or the snow will make the flowers dead. If you live in Florida, you can just forget what I last said. Leave the world a better place, that's what we came here for. Use an ashtray, please don't use the floor.
Weavecast first product review. Ashford's Knitter's Loom. This is a new rigid heddle style loom that's designed to be easy to use, light, portable, and is targeted to knitters and beginning weavers to give them an entry level loom that's not too expensive and will let them make beautiful cloth. And I must say, I am taken with this loom. When I first saw it in handwoven, I was a little skeptical. I didn't know if it was sturdy enough or intriguing enough to keep you entertained for a very long time. But since I've played with it, I have to say, I am addicted to this loom. And to give you some idea of how this loom has won me over, I used to be, well, let's just admit it, a floor loom snob. If it didn't have treadles, I just couldn't be bothered. But this loom is just so much fun to use. I can't keep my hands off of it. And I am really grateful that Ashford made this loom. I think it's a wonderful way to get people who are currently knitting interested in weaving. And I'm also grateful for another reason, because for the first time, I have a loom that I can use while editing audio. How cool is that? I mean, up till now, I've had to keep myself entertained while I listen to the audio for the show over and over and over by knitting a sock or some other repetitive thing. But now I have a cute little loom that fits in my recording studio, slides into my desk, and lets me actually weave while podcasting. Thank you, Ashford. Thank you. I'm going to go into the specifics in just a minute. As you can tell from my enthusiasm, I am largely delighted with this loom. There are only a few little tweaks here and there that I would recommend. First of all, let me describe the out-of-the-box experience. I got home, opened up my box, and inside, ready to weave, was the Ashford Knitter's Loom. And I took it out, and it was just adorable. It is made in a lovely New Zealand, I think it's beech hardwood, which is kind of a golden yellow wood. And very smoothly finished, very nice to touch, rounded edges everywhere. And if you're a tool junkie like me and you like beautiful wood, you're going to be happy with this loom. The next thing I noticed was that the box was stocked with goodies. You have everything you need, except yarn, in the box, ready to go, ready to weave. It comes with a warping peg, and this is a way to allow you to warp the loom without a warping board. Simply stated, you tie onto the back loom, run a loop up through the loom, go around the peg and come back, and that's how you measure off your warp. And because the Ashford Rigid Heddle won't hold an enormous warp anyway, this is quite a reasonable way to put a warp on the loom. If you want to use a conventional warping board with the Knitter's Loom, you may, but until then, you could certainly use this method. It's the method I used while testing the loom and worked just fine. It took me about an hour to warp this loom up from start to finish. Went on very smoothly, very easily, And as you'll recall, I have had some issues with putting warps on looms in the past, so that is quite a recommendation. It came with not one, but two stick shuttles. So if you want to do color and weave effects, you're good to go. I thought that was quite generous of Ashford. It also came with a slaying hook and a heddle hook. So like I said, everything you need to weave already in the box. And the manual that comes with the loom is very impressive in that it shows step by step everything you need to do to set up the loom for weaving and to warp it and to weave. The pictures remind me a lot of the DK books. Very clean, very easy to understand, and line drawings to accentuate sections that perhaps are not completely clear in the pictures. Very, very fine manual. I was initially testing this loom after the boy had gone to bed, and it was late at night, and I was very tired. The manual was so clear, and the loom was 95% ready to go out of the box, that my first warp went on flawlessly, and I would hope that any knitters who tried this would have a similar experience, or at least a very easy one. One thing that did give me pause as I was spreading everything out and looking at it was the tensioning device on the loom. It is made of blue high-impact plastic. And I've had experience with other looms that have plastic tensioning gears, and they haven't held a good tension, so I was a bit worried by that. But I must say that Ashford invested in some high-quality, high-impact plastic here. And they also did something very intelligent with the piece that fits into the gears. Instead of having one little protrusion that locks in the gear, it has two. And so it gives a very firm tension. And I'm sorry to say this, Ashford rep, I tested this quite thoroughly, and I just cranked the tension up very, very firmly, and it held like a dream. Great tension on this little loom. Another interesting feature is that it has a notch on the bottom. The way you weave with this rigid heddle loom is you put that notch into the corner of a table and kind of brace the front beam against your belly, and it holds really securely, and it's very fun to weave on. You can easily fall into a rhythm. Not quite as much fun as a floor loom, but pretty darn close and way more portable. Like I said, I can weave with this while I'm editing audio, something I can't do with my baby wolf. It is also incredibly lightweight. I weighed one of these looms with the padded bag, and it came in under 6 pounds. It was like 5.7 pounds. So you could carry this on a trip and not tire yourself out. The carrying bag that you can buy would easily fit under an airplane seat. And it comes actually with quite a nice cardboard box if you don't want to spring for the padded bag. You could use that cardboard box as a great template to build your own bag. Hey, perhaps even with hand-woven cloth. A couple of the things that gave me some caution about the loom are that the tie-ons that attach the front and back rods to the front beam and the back beam are more high-impact plastic. And the way you set them up is you kind of snap them into little holes. Kind of gave me caution because looks as if over time those might wear and break as you flex the plastic back and forth by rolling them onto the beam. But that would be an easy situation to fix with TechSolve. In fact, if I bought one of these looms, I'd probably just put a length of TechSolve in my carry case for such an emergency. You could just slip a little TechSolve in there, put a peg in one of the holes, and bam, it would last forever. It comes with a 7.5 dent reed, which is great for worsted weight yarns, but you can also purchase separately a 5, 10, and 12.5 dents per inch reed. So you could weave quite a variety of yarns on this loom, from sock weight yarns up to rather bulky yarns. Oh, I noticed an interesting thing while warping on, and I just warped this loom on for the second time a few minutes ago. The full weaving width of this loom is just under 12 inches. And if you are warping the full width, you can use as a warp separator a piece of legal paper turned sideways, and it just exactly fits on the back beam. I don't know if that was done purposefully by Ashford, but it was a really nice little feature. I must say, I wish that Ashford had thrown some sticks in the box. I personally don't like to warp with paper. I prefer sticks because it gives a much more even tension. But perhaps Ashford was thinking to keep costs down and to keep the weight down that paper would be a good thing to use. That's what they recommend in their book, in their manual. And that's what I used. And for this length warp, it actually works pretty well. But if I were to get one of these looms, I would probably make a few sticks. You can easily make those by going to like a Home Depot or other hardware store and getting some molding sticks and cutting them to the size of the back beam. Weaving on the loom is quite easy and fun. Ashford has two positions, one with the heddle up and one with the heddle down, and both lock into place. I've used some looms where there is no lock for the heddle, so you have to hold it up while you're trying to put the weft in, which is quite awkward. So in comparison, the Ashford loom was quite nice to use. There's also a rest position that you put the reed in when you are taking a break. It puts the warp at a complete level so it's not stretched. And that's also the place where you put it when you fold the loom. And yes, you can fold this loom with the warp on. So you can go somewhere, weave a little bit, and when you need to leave, just fold up your loom, slip it in either your cardboard or your padded bag, and off you go. Very easy. The final downside to this loom that I discovered, because I'm a rigorous and thorough tester, I wondered how this loom would perform in off-road situations. And by that I mean away from a table with a nice crisp edge. So being your hard-working podcaster and wanting to thoroughly test this loom out in all possible scenarios, I took it out to my hammock in my backyard on a fine, fine day. And I must say, it didn't weave for squat in the hammock. There was no real way to brace it between my knees. But other than that, and other than my concerns about the ties on the front and back beams eventually breaking, and my wish that Ashford had thrown a couple of sticks in so you could use those instead of paper for a warp separator, I must say I am completely smitten with this loom. Just smitten. It is very lovely. And in fact, I'm quite sad I'm going to have to be giving this loner loom back. And since playing with this loom, I've looked into rigid heddles a bit more to see what else you could do with it besides scarves. And there are tons of things. You could make some relatively small placemats on this. You could make scarves. You could piece scarves together and make a couch afghan if you wanted to. Many traditional ethnic fabrics were made using narrow strips of cloth, like kimonos only use a 13-inch wide cloth. So it would be easy to make a variety of projects with this if you're willing to piece things a bit. A rigid heddle does not replace a floor loom. A rigid heddle is the equivalent of two shafts, which means you can do all the cool two-shaft things like log cabin, and you can do pickup. There are a lot of ways to push the envelope with a rigid heddle loom. It will never replace a floor loom, but it is a heck of a lot more portable. If you're looking for a first loom without a lot of investment, that's easy to use, fun, and produces a gorgeous cloth with yarns that you may already have in your stash. It works great with knitting yarns because, of course, that's what it's designed to work with. This is a great little loom. I've gotten great comments back on the two scarves I've woven on this. I used a random warp, and what that means is I took scraps and odd pieces of yarn from my stash, some hand-painted, some hand-spun. And hand-spun is great to use on this loom because it has very, very little loom waste. And threw them on in kind of a random order. And I did a mirror warp so that I would warp the outside two threads, and then the next two threads, and worked my way in with these random yarns to give it a symmetry that was pleasing. And then wove it off with a single weft to make it unified. Because I don't really like horizontal stripes in scarves. It's a personal prejudice. But I like the lines to flow lengthwise. And really, really nice, yummy cloth. So, knitter's loom, two thumbs up. I'd have to say that I wish it were a little bit cheaper so I could afford one. But it's a lovely loom. And Kai enjoyed it too. We had been playing with it one evening, and the first thing he said upon awaking the next day is, "I want to weave on the medium-sized loom." So, definitely two thumbs up from the Weavecast crew here. I'd also like to talk about the companion book. It's sold separately. It's called Weaving for Knitters. It's published by Ashford, and the author is Rowena Hart. And it reaches out to knitters of these wild and funky scarves that people are doing with like eyelash yarns on big needles and tries to show them how they could do weaving to create these shawls instead. And on first glance, it's a beautifully put together book. The photographs are gorgeous. The descriptions are quite clear. Rowena has been very careful not to overwhelm the reader with too much weaving terminology. The patterns are set up in a very knitterly way, and it uses knitter's yarns. But I have to say that the designs left me a little bit cold, because I am not one of those people who does big funky scarves and eyelash yarn. I mean, I did one, and then I was kind of done. And a lot of these are those type of scarves. She does some interesting things with color and weave. She talks about houndstooth. And she uses a lot of texture. So if you like really textured, funky scarves, you will probably just love this book. But I personally would have liked to see her talk more about rigid heddle weaving in general and how to do things like pickup and other ways to use the loom than just creating scarves. Because if you picked up this book in a yarn store, you might think that all you could do with the knitter's loom was scarves. And it may be that Rowena Hart has written another book on rigid heddle weaving and has covered those topics. And so in this felt that she just needed to hit that one narrow note. So if you are interested in a book to tell you more about what you can do with the Ashford knitter's loom, I wouldn't recommend this so much as any general book on rigid heddle weaving. Either Rowena's earlier book, which I've heard is quite good, or the hands-on book of rigid heddle weaving. Any of those will give you a more well-rounded view of weaving with a rigid heddle loom, such as the knitter's loom.
You're a
We are lucky to have with us in the studios today Robin Spady, who is not only a wonderfully inventive and creative weaver, but also someone who is just a heck of a lot of fun to hang out with. And she has passed her COE levels 1 and 2 and has done some really interesting things with primitive looms, and she's going to talk with us today about Inca looms. Please help me welcome Robin Spady.
Thank you, Son.
Hand weaving is such an unusual profession. I'm always curious, how did you get started with weaving?
Weaving for me was oddly very accessible. My great-grandmother was a weaver, wove my baby blanket. Unfortunately, she died before I was 2, and I don't really have a recollection of her, but my father inherited all of her weaving equipment, including her loom, and it was in our garage, folded up, set aside and covered up. My brothers and I would go out and peek under the cover and go, titter, titter, titter. But in 1969, I went to camp in Camp Namanu, which is a campfire girl camp outside of Sandy, Oregon, near Mount Hood. And we had a choice of programs to pick from, one of which was weaving. I thought that sounded like something I would at least stay clean at doing. But I expected that they were going to give us a piece of cardboard with notches cut in it, strung up with yarn. And when I showed up at the weavery at Camp Namanu, it actually had 4-shaft floor looms in it that cool. were the exact same size, same company that my great-grandmother's was that was sitting at home. So I spent the week learning to weave a little bit, but my cabin counselor knew that I was a little frustrated with going out on nature hikes, so they let me go pester the weavery director quite a bit. So I came back with some sort of fundamental knowledge about weaving, told my mother I know how to use this loom now, and she was gracious enough to let me set it up. I didn't know very much about yarns and the technicalities of weaving, but I could figure something out. And when I went to high school in 1974, we had an art room that had 15 floor looms in it.
Wow, you've been really blessed with weaving all throughout your life.
Well, and that was one thing, that it was so accessible. I mean, there was a loom there. They taught it at camp. I go to a high school with an art room where Mrs. Borden, one of the art teachers, one of the things that she did teach was fiber arts. And if you completed the fiber arts program, which was taking a fleece that had just been sheared off a sheep, learning to card it, spin it, wash it, dye it, and do something with it, then you were allowed to get on the loom. So by the end of my freshman year in high school, I had completed the prerequisite fiber arts program, took the weaving course, and then spent my sophomore, junior, and senior years in high school as the teaching assistant in there.
Man, I wish I could have gone to your high school.
Yeah, This was back in the 70s. The program, unfortunately, is no longer there. This was at Wilson High School in Portland, Oregon. The program was largely hinged on having Mrs. Borden teaching there. She also taught bookmaking and painting, and a wonderful, fascinating woman. That was how I got started in weaving. A rather unique, easy way to be exposed to something that was just so wonderful.
I've seen some of the work you've done with very complex double stitch cloth, but I also know that you teach workshops on Inca looms, and mm-hmm. you do a lot of work on the Inca loom, even right. with your big floor looms that mm-hmm. you have at home. What draws you to Inca loom weaving?
The Inca loom weaving, and an Inca loom is just one of a number of ways to weave bands.
Actually, before we get too far in this, perhaps we should describe what an Inca loom is.
The traditional Inca loom is about 100 to 150 years old, based upon designs that came out of England. It's not as primitive as some people think. The Inca loom is just one way to do band weaving. There's a number of other ways, including tablet weaving. Almost every culture had their own way of weaving bands. The Inca loom allows you to create a fairly long warp, anywhere from a yard and a half to floor models can do, 10 yards mm-hmm. sometimes. And it's a fairly simple setup that has pegs that look very similar to a warping board in a way that allow you to wrap a warp around it and weave what essentially is a 2-shaft structure. And it's largely warp-faced, meaning that the warp is almost all that you see. The weft is concealed.
Right. And this is what most people might be familiar with, looking at camera straps or guitar straps, right. that kind of weaving.
Right.
So let's get back now to why does that intrigue you so?
Well, I hadn't had the opportunity, or really the motivation, to weave on an Inca loom until 1999. And I was participating with a group through the Seattle Weavers Guild, and we decided that we were going to do one of the monthly samples. We had recently had a presentation on algebraic expression, which is a patterning technique. The write-up that I think covers it the best is done by a weaver by the name of Lana Schneider, who lives in Olympia, Washington. We decided that we wanted to do a sample on algebraic expression and what would be an unusual way to interpret it. We thought, gosh, let's do it on an Inca loom. That was really the first opportunity that most of us had to weave on an Inca loom. And weaving on it, I thought, this is a really amazing thing to do. This strap or this band that I'm weaving is very strong. And I started thinking about all the things that you could do with narrow woven bands and how you can actually experiment on the loom without occupying the larger looms.
You've done some really intriguing things with your bands. I've taken mm-hmm. your Inca loom workshop. The Inca bands you make are not the 1970s guitar straps.
Right.
They're really done in fine silks. They're beautiful. And you're doing intriguing things with how you use and present them. Could mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about what you do with your bands?
It started looking at narrow bands as anywhere from ribbon. My favorite thing probably to do with narrow bands is using silk. The most common size I use is what's called a 32 silk that I get from a company called Halcyon Yarn. They have these great little mini cones. And it was at first the only way I could afford to work with silk, but it produces really a silk ribbon. And when you start Ooh. Thinking about the band being more of a ribbon, you start being able to transform that into everything from necklaces and jewelry to then using it to embellish garments and other kinds of items. It really was allowing me to experiment with color, fiber, texture at a very reasonable price because it really requires very little in the way of materials.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things that you did, and it's very silly and I have no idea why this thrilled me so much, was you made custom shoelaces.
Yes. Yeah, the shoelaces were quite a bit of work because a standard 5-eyelet shoelace, one shoelace is 36 inches long. So in order to do a pair, you're weaving 2 yards. What I did find after having woven some and selling them was that some people were taking the shoelaces and using them to string funky beads on it and turning them into necklaces. So I haven't done shoelaces for quite a while because it is so much weaving, but it was one way of how you can transform a very simple narrow band into something that was actually a lot of fun that you could wear and at the same time still learn about weaving, work with color combinations that you never would have considered possible or pursued because of the cost and the risk. If you get it on a large scale, you know, where do you go with it from there?
Right, you're not cutting off 24-inch wide cloth off your 16-shaft right. harness loom where you've warped 10 yards. You just have this little tiny amount. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after you saw people using your shoelaces as jewelry, did mm-hmm. that inspire you to go in a more jewelry direction with your Inca bands?
Yeah, the jewelry is something, everything from looping it around and turning 8 inches of narrow Inca band into a pair of earrings, which the materials cost was anywhere from maybe $1 to $2, mm-hmm. but the earrings were selling for maybe $15 to $18. There's work that goes into it, but it's an affordable item that's hand-woven that people can justify as opposed to maybe a garment that might be hundreds of dollars.
Right.
It also was an item that had a very good margin going for it, and so probably out of all the items that I make and sell, I make the best margin on Inca band jewelry.
And I imagine it'd be very light to wear, too.
Yeah, very light. You can work with, you know, outrageous color combinations.
Yeah, because of the small scale, it's not going to overwhelm mm-hmm. you. Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one earring takes anywhere from 3 to 4 inches. So out of an 8-inch long band, which can take, you know, once you've set it up, minutes to weave, it's actually fairly easy to start transforming them if you consider the band as ribbon into things like jewelry. ID badges for people that are working in companies that have to wear the plastic pouch. If you want to hang it on something, you want to coordinate it with maybe what you're wearing, something that's a little more distinctive in case you have a tendency to set things down. Eyeglass strap. I mean, just anything that's small. And one weaver in Tacoma, Roberta Lowe's, has actually used hand-woven Inca bands as hem tape. So even on the inside of her garments, you know, she's embellished it with something hand-woven.
Yeah, I think I've seen Daryl Lancaster do some interesting finishing with Inkle loom straps on some of her piecing garments. I had a Inkle band that I made that wasn't terribly successful because it was bright peach and bright fuchsia, but it made a wonderful strap for when I have my scissors hanging around my neck, because if I go to a weaving workshop, it's very distinctive and I can find it right away because it's so loud. What's the most interesting thing you've woven on an Inkle loom?
I think the most interesting thing, probably some of the work I'm doing now, which is in an area called galloons. Galloon is a French term that doesn't translate very well into English, but is largely used to describe ornate trims. And this is where, in thinking of these very narrow bands, the weft, which is interwoven with the warp, of looking at using multiple versions of it and not turning the weft at the selvage, but carrying it out and around and creating loops or picots that you might see in other textile techniques, and in anywhere from 2 to 6 at the same time to create these intertwining loops at the selvages to recreate these.
So this would look a bit like the trim you can find at fabric stores for like upholstery, where they have the big loops hanging down and fringe and things?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
And if you look at really true high-end quality trim that is designed for use in interiors, you will spend an enormous amount of money. This is one way of using fairly small amounts of material to create your own trim, and not necessarily just for curtain tiebacks, but for belts, or even on an even smaller scale of creating very loopy, almost lacy-like bands that could be used for jewelry.
Oh, very cool. And speaking of jewelry, we talked to Arlene Fish not too long ago. I was wondering, is it possible to weave with metal on an Inkle loom, or does that tear it up?
It is possible to weave with wire. I've used mostly 26-gauge just craft wire that's very accessible. It's very soft and pliable. When I warp the loom, I warp around the circumference because it doesn't like, after it's been woven, the band gets much more rigid and stronger, but it doesn't like going around and back around the pegs.
Yeah, I imagine that could build kinks into the wire.
It just, well, and it's also you're bending and unbending this woven band. I don't think all Inkle looms can withstand the tension or have the strength to handle wire, but most commercial Inkle looms would do that. And it's been a fun way to just get introduced to weaving unusual materials on a fairly limited basis when it comes to time and when it comes to materials. You know, there's not a huge investment on it.
Yeah, and I think with precious metals, a Inkle loom would be especially apropos because you have a continuous warp, so there's no loom waste.
Right.
So when you're weaving with wire on an Inkle loom, do you protect the pegs or the wood in any way, or have you had any problems?
No. It isn't cutting in. Again, I'm using a round wire, so there aren't any edges on the wire. And I haven't woven on any particular Inkle loom enough that it would wear it down. I would imagine if you did it every day, eventually you would end up wearing into the dowels.
Yeah, if you were going to be a dedicated metal Inkle loom weaver, you might want to create a metal Inkle loom or one that had metal rods.
Right.
Or metal sheathing for your rods.
But yeah.
I know that you have recently developed an Inkle loom that Ashford is putting out. It's a micro mini. It's called an Inklet.
The Inklet. This started in 99 when I started weaving on Inkle loom. I had a book that had plans for an Inkle loom in it, and my husband made one for me per the plans, and the thing was enormous. It wove actually rather well. When I started getting more and more interested in Inkle weaving, I started looking for a traditional Inkle loom, and Ashford at the time was making an Inkle loom that did a warp around almost 4 yards long. So I purchased that and really enjoyed it, but it was a little too large to travel with. And I had learned many, many years ago when I was still working outside the home or outside my studio that I'd learned to tat. The nice thing about tatting is that you can put it in your pocket and travel with it. But for me, like knitting, it required me to concentrate so much. And I wanted something that if I set it down, I knew where I was when I came back. If I wanted to have a conversation while I was doing it, I could. And I realized that Inkle weaving fulfilled that need. I just needed a small Inkle loom. I went and purchased one that was on the market, but I didn't like the way it wove, so my husband and I came up with a design, and we ended up making very small Inca looms for a while. But we were getting so many orders that neither one of us really wanted to get into the business of making looms. And 2 years ago, I ran into Richard Ashford at Convergence in Denver, Colorado, and we were chatting about possible improvements to the Inca loom they had on the market at the time, and that over the next few months evolved into Richard Ashford and I working together on developing what ended up becoming this Incalette, which helped me fulfill my desire to see a small Inca loom on the market that traveled well and took the burden off my shoulders and my husband's shoulders in making these.
Right, but you're not getting anything off that loom, are
you? No. It was just a joy to work with Richard and everybody at Ashford, including Rowena Hart, who wrote the instructions for it, of just seeing what I thought was a need going unfulfilled in fiber arts, this great little loom, so that people could learn about weaving and be able to travel with it.
Well, I'm really glad that you were so generous to share that idea, because I'm lucky enough to have one of your earlier prototypes, and I just love taking it with me. If I were going to try to weave during traffic, which I do not recommend, that is the loom I would take. It's just lovely and beautiful, and it has really good tension.
Well, the tensioning device, the Incalette, is largely based on the design of Ashford's larger Inca loom, and I like the tensioning device because you can easily manipulate the tension with two hands. Some Inca looms, the way that the tensioning device works is if you pull the tensioning device tight, you're pulling the loom towards you, and you need a way to push the loom back, and you need really a third hand to tighten it down. This way, we just flip the little paddle with one hand and tighten it down with the other hand.
Right, and just to clarify, the tensioning that the Incalette uses is a paddle that rotates, and as the angle changes, it, of course, changes the length of the warp and thus the tension. And the older style Inca looms had the front bar, you would slide it back and forth, and like Robin said, you'd need that third hand. So what advice would you give to a beginning weaver who's starting out with Inca looms?
I think if you're interested in learning about weaving, there is so much you can learn on an Inca loom. I think it's one of the most undervalued, almost misunderstood looms. I think we think of them as a way of getting children involved in weaving, which it is a great way, but it's also a way of learning many of the basics about weaving. It's the equivalent of a two-shaft loom. There are a number of things that you can do with it, and I think it's a fairly inexpensive way of getting introduced to another area of fiber arts and really letting your imagination run wild about what you can do with narrow bands. Everything from using as jewelry, embellishment for garments, the possibilities are endless.
Aside from putting a pattern into the warp, because it's a warp-faced cloth, and weaving that out and doing inlay, what other techniques do you think people might want to play with?
There's a whole range of techniques related to what's called supplementary warp patterning, which is a fairly distinctive way, there's more than one way, of setting your loom up that by manipulating particular fibers up and down by hand, which may seem like it's time-consuming, but you do pick up a rhythm to it, you can create some extremely ornate patterns. One of the most accomplished ankle weavers that I've ever come across is a weaver by the name of Jaquetta Nisbet, who has done such amazing things with not only patterning but with color, and has ended up doing large reptilian figures that are anywhere from 4 to 6 feet long through using this kind of technique. But it's one way that you can get really an unlimited range of patterns, very similar to some of the Bolivian pickup techniques that some people weave using slightly different techniques.
I've seen Jaquetta do a presentation, and she has taken the Inca loom and just run with it. It's really amazing.
Yeah, there's very little she can't do on an Inca loom. Just a really remarkable weaver.
Have you ever done much with piecing bands together?
I've done some of that with piecing. If you think of Inca bands as being narrow fabric, you can actually piece them together. What I do most often is I will sew them down onto a muslin side by side, and where the edges or where the selvages abut each other is I will use different techniques to embellish over that, whether it's been beading, whether it's just using a creative stitch, using a tapestry-like needle, and some of the yarns that I've used in the warp to create fabric that I've used for, in my case, mostly purses. There have been some weavers, Jaquetta Nisbet being one of them, that has transformed these into garments.
Yeah, I believe there are a lot of traditional cultures that use narrow cloths, like African cultures, and getting to like 13, 14 inches, the Japanese. So there are a lot of creative ways to piece garments together.
Yeah, I've even interwoven the bands with each other.
Oh, cool.
To create larger pieces. If I have two bands that I think go together, of just weaving them as though they're, each band is an end in itself.
Oh, I never thought about that. That's so cool. You could get pretty large pretty quick that way.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any particular tips and tricks that you would give to people who are getting started on the Inkaloom? Like, what's the most common beginner mistake that you'd caution them against?
I think the first warp or two, do something fairly narrow, fairly simple. Every once in a while, people in the back of their mind have had a very grand, very overwhelming project in mind, and whether it's an ornate camera strap or a wide belt that they're thinking of, it can become overwhelming when you're setting up the Inkaloom for the first time. And so I usually encourage people, do something that maybe only has 30 to 40 warp ends, and just get used to setting it up, weaving on it, you know, working on your technique before you progress on to, you know, something more ambitious.
Well, I'm going to put my favorite beginner mistake is make sure that your tension is slacked all the way before you put your warp on.
Because
there have been times I've put a warp on and then realized I have no way to reduce the tension as I weave.
Yeah. And that really comes down to understanding, you know, how your Inkaloom works. Every once in a while I come across an Inkaloom where understanding how the tensioning devices, that when you warp the loom, you want the warp as long as possible, because as you weave, it will get shorter.
Right.
And so if you start with it already short, you don't have anywhere to go.
Right. And you can weave about 6 inches before you get really frustrated.
Yeah. And that's one reason, you know, just getting used to the loom, how it works, of starting with something fairly small, just as a trial run, is a good way to start.
Since I've put the problem out there, I'm also going to give the solution, because I ran into this. If you get that warp that's on and you've woven a little bit in the take up, and you have no room to reduce the tension, the thing I do is I cut the warp, tie a knot in it, tie a supplementary cord, and then retie it back on with the tension where it ought to be.
Yeah, I've done that. I've had to do that once or twice where I forgot to set the tension.
Okay, I don't feel so bad.
The tensioning device where I wanted it, where I really want to weave it off. But yeah, just cutting it near the end and tying the two ends together will give you that added length that you need.
Right. Well, thank you so much for making the trek out here and for talking to us about Inkalooms. It's been...
Oh, my pleasure.
A lot of fun. Before we go, Robin Spady has a website where you can learn about all the wonderful workshops she teaches and see a gallery of some of her other work, both Inkle and non-Inkle. I'll have the link up on the show notes, but it's www.spadystudios.com. Well, thank you very much, Robin.
Well, thank you, Son.
Today's essay, Dog Warps, with apologies to canines the world over. Jacquetta Nesbett, who is probably the most amazing Inkaloom weaver on the planet, produced a video with Victorian Video called Supplementary Warp Patterning, where she discussed how to use an Inkaloom and then how to do pickup patterning to make really intricate straps and bags out of wool. And she had two projects on the video, one of which was a fairly simple strap to introduce you to the idea of supplementary warps and how to do the pickups. And the other was this really involved, cool Guatemalan style purse with inlay and self-twisting fringe in the warp. And what that means is you first, before you even started weaving, you took all the yarn to your spinning wheel and added twist so that it was actually kinking back on itself. And so when you take the bag off the loom, the extra warp that you haven't woven folds over and plies itself. And it was a really cool technique I wanted to try. And so instead of starting with the super simple strap to introduce you to the technique, I said, I'm going to jump right in and make the uber complicated bag that is too wide to fit on my Inkaloom. Yep, that was my thinking. Sometimes I take optimism too far. And to make matters worse, I decided to use some yarn I had gotten for free, some incredibly hairy wool that was way too rough for next to the skin stuff. And I said to myself, I said, "Self, this is the perfect opportunity to use this wool because it won't be next to the skin. It'll be a bag, and the strength of the super hairy wool will be perfect for a nice, tightly woven bag." And I had taken this wool that I had gotten for free and used it for a natural dye day that I had done with some friends. And so I had all these wonderful colors. And if you've ever done natural dyeing, you know that natural dyed colors tend to mix well. So I had cochineal reds, madder reds, indigo blues, greens, weld yellows, a wonderful spectrum of natural colors that serendipitously would work beautifully in this native looking bag. And so I dutifully followed the pattern, put the warp on the Inca loom for half of the bag, and I was planning to weave half, sew them together. What I didn't know at that point, being a relatively new weaver and one who had never woven on an Inca loom before, I was using the video to teach myself Inca loom weaving. Again, why I picked the most complicated project, I do not know. Never having woven a warp-faced cloth before, what I did not know was that in a warp-faced cloth, the warp threads lie very close to each other. And so my super hairy wool that was overspun, so it had a lot of energy in it, would try to ply with its neighbors. And every time I tried to pull up on half the warp to get a shed or push down on half the warp to get a shed, it was, well, let's just say Arnold Schwarzenegger could not have gotten a clean shed on that thing. I wove about an inch in absolute misery. I mean, there's a reason that most people start Inca looming in pearl cotton, but I did not know that. So I had my over-twisted, super hairy, rough wool, and after about an inch, I was so frustrated and angry, and my hands were starting to shred because I have delicate skin. I just took my Inca loom and I set it on top of the bookshelf for a month. And each time I looked at it, I'd feel failure and despair, like, oh, I should know how to do this, and I can't, and it's hard, and it's bad. And I'd ask myself, how can I make this work? And I would spend time thinking about it. Well, maybe if I put sizing on the wool, maybe if I did this, maybe if I did that, how can I fix this? And after hours of meditation and contemplation, I realized some things cannot be fixed. Some warps are just bad. In my guild, we call them dog warps. Perhaps it's the wrong color, the wrong yarn for the fabric, weak yarn that snaps. Maybe it's two vibrant colors that when you put them together make you physically ill. These warps cannot be fixed. These warps must be exercised. But I'm going to help. Just follow along with me, and we'll get through this together. Pick up your scissors. Repeat after me. Thou art weft. Now, cut off the offending warp, and if it's a nice yarn, coil it neatly in a Ziploc. If it's not a nice yarn, like my hairy, over-twisted, nasty wool, toss it with gusto and indignation in the trash. That done, have a cup of tea, go outside, walk around the house, take a deep breath. Now, rewarp your loom with something easy and satisfying. Once you have started weaving again and are having fun again, the exorcism is complete. You are now curse-free. So I threw that nasty, scratchy wool away. And in retrospect, I kind of wish I'd saved it because I've gotten into rug hooking where there is no warp and weft, and it would have been nice for that, but, you know, oh well. And with my naked Inca loom, I warped up the easiest thing I could think of, a little 5-strand strap of silky smooth rayon in outrageous colors that I love. Yeah, my embroidery scissors strap. And the moral of the story is, I'm still weaving, and I'm having fun, so don't let a bad warp suck the joy out of your craft. I'd like to thank Dave of Chub Creek for putting together Who Cut the Warp Off for me. It was a little ditty that I imagined in my head, and I don't have the musical talent to pull that off, but he does, and he generously donated some time to make it work for me. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Dave. Weavecast is made possible by listener donations. Today's episode was brought to you by the generosity of Kate, Cynthia, Nancy, and Hazel. Thank you. Next episode will be jam-packed with weaving knowledge on one of the following topics: Double Weave with Jennifer Moore, Secret Messages in Weaving with Bonnie Tarsis, or maybe something completely serendipitous. So until then, get warped, because everyone knows you got to be warped to weave. Today's musical guests are Advice by Small Fish Adventures on their album Catch This, Tiny Beauty by Pink and Ruby, and of course, Who Let the Warp Out by Dave of Chub Creek. There will be links to these on the Weavecast website, and except for Who Let the Warp Out, all of these are featured on the PodSafe Music Network.